It's the Score North Twin Show.
Okay. Okay, we can exhale for a minute. There's nothing like the Chicago White Sox, Trevor Plouffe Tuesday, to make you feel better about yourselves now. That's the eighth time they've been shut out, and we're like a month into the season.
It's been a tough watch for them. It was a nice watch for Twins fans last night. You get Max Kepler back's first pitch hack and double in the gap. That was really good to see. But, yeah, it seems like right now this little stretch of games they have, White Sox, Angels, White Sox, it's got to be a get-right stretch because, I mean, what are the White Sox, 3-19 now?
3-19.
Yep. Tough.
Dex, what was the clubhouse like yesterday?
It was a lot better. It was a lot more relaxed than on Sunday. Edward Julian's OPS rose by 100 points yesterday.
Yeah.
Just because he goes home run, double. He pulled one. We were kind of joking with him. It's like, you know, typically your home runs are oppo. And he ends up pulling one. I guess
he thought he got that one. He thought he got that one.
Yeah. So yes, it was a much more fun clubhouse. Chris Paddock, by the way, that dude is swagging out. He looked like a sheriff. He looked like a cowboy rocking into the club. He had the 10-gallon hat. He had the neckerchief. He literally looked like I played Red Dead Redemption for a little bit, a video game. He looked like a character out of a video game.
Was he wearing chaps?
Wasn't wearing chaps, but he's also, I tweeted this. He's got the belt he wears on the mound is like this red, shiny, kind of even like, it's got a little like sparkle to it. It's like its own custom belt that you can see all the way from the top of the stadium. It's awesome.
I love it.
Hey, these Southern boys, as much as they want you to think that they're like, you know, down home, all I need is my hunting dog and my piece of land. Like, no, a lot of these guys are like Hollywood, or at least want to be a little bit inside of them. I saw that with Brian Dozier a lot too. He tried to play it down so much, but they got it in there.
Yeah, a little bit of glam to him.
I don't even know where he's from. Where is Paddy from? Is he a Texas guy?
Yeah, he's
Texas.
Yeah, he's a Texas guy. And by the way, he does have land and he does have a dog. Those are two.
I saw both.
That's the Bumgarner thing, right? Like Mad Bum had the land, he had all that stuff, but he was eccentric too. I think those guys a lot of times are just eccentric, so it makes it funnier. But yeah, Dozier, I felt like the longer that we were around Dozier, the more eccentric he became. Like, I felt like at first he wasn't really, and Trevor, by the end, it felt like he was pretty damn eccentric.
Do you know what changes those guys into that?
Couple bucks.
A little bit of money.
Couple bucks.
Yeah. You can buy more, buying more land, buying more dogs.
Yeah. Isn't that what they say? If you're rich, you're eccentric. If you're not, you're crazy, right? That's the difference.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Doge too. Doge, top 10 World Series winning meme too. Champagne bath city.
Sure.
Double barrels. Yeah. So the Twins pick up a therapeutic win yesterday. They get back on track. Now they got their best pitchers lined up here. So here's just, I guess, an obscure place to start this conversation. We do this all the time with you're a former first round pick, for instance, where a guy will come up first time in the bigs, will struggle because baseball is hard. And then you go back to them. Not everyone comes up and just like hits 400, you know, the first month and sticks. And it's usually like up, down, stop, start. Oh, third time up. Now I know what I'm doing, right?
Sure.
People forgot about Trevor Larnach around here, and that's a former first round pick. I know it's a super small sample here, but I think this might be his one. Like, if you don't click now, then maybe the Twins move on and find somebody else, but he looks dialed. He was batting third in their shuffled lineup last night, so I don't know. I think Trevor Larnach could be a really interesting key here as the Twins look for answers with this lineup, Coach Trev.
Yeah, I mean, he's 27 years old now, and I mean, let's see how many he's got. 619 at bats at the big league level. He's done it at the minor league level. He looks, I don't know. I've watched him hit quite a bit, and something about him in the box yesterday seemed a little bit different. I think even Morney referenced it on the broadcast. He looks just more calm and patient and confident in the box. And sometimes that just comes with, you know, having more at bats at the big level, or like you're kind of referencing, understanding that it's go time. When you get put that pressure, if you're a guy that's still has a, options left. You know, it's your first time up and then you get option down. You just feel like there's time for you to figure it out. But at this point, I don't believe he has any options left. I guess this year is his last option year. Like it's go time. You're 27 years old. Like I said, like you got to figure it out at some point. And sometimes when you get pushed into a corner, if you will, things start to click, you know, whether it's you're changing your routine or you just understand that you have to do it or it's not going to be with this organization and it might not be at all. That'll motivate you. It will.
Speaking of that, Trevor, Carlos Santana, great career, 38, looks at this point in time, and now we're not even out of the first month, but he basically looks cooked. How long do you think they give this? Because there are definitely guys, and Santana's probably the ideal guy to play first, but as far as at the plate, there are probably better choices. How long do you think a guy like this gets? Do you think it's into May? Do you think it's into June, where if this continues, it's just the reality is he just might be done?
I think he still gets some runway here because, I mean, they paid him, what, $5.25 million, and they'll mm-hmm. just have to eat that if they decide to move on, unless they can find a trade partner. I think it depends on who's pushing him or if anybody is pushing him. If, you know, we do have plenty of capable guys, you know, that can play first base. If, you know, Kirilloff goes off and, you know, they say, hey, you can play every single day, maybe that's something that happens. But I think he'll get a little bit more time. But if people behind him or adjacent to him, you know, start to go offensively, they're going to have no choice. I think Rocco even was talking about that this weekend, saying like there could be roster changes and we can't keep doing the same thing. So maybe he doesn't have as much time as I think, but you know, just kind of going back in history and how teams usually operate, I believe you're right. He probably gets, you know, another 3 weeks, something like that. And if it's just completely bad and nothing changes in that time, they don't see any improvements, I could see them figuring something out.
So back on Larnach there for just a bit, Trev, because the Twins have historically crushed fastballs like the last few years. They're one of the best fastball hitting teams. And then on off speed, they've inversely been one of the worst teams against off speed. And Larnach, even in this past, he has come up and he's also crushed fastballs, right? I mean, that's actually been no problem for him. It's adjusting to those breaking balls, which is also very difficult to do in general. But like as a team, the Twins obviously struggle against off speed pitching. Like, I know it's not night and day. You can't just like go fix that right away from one day into the next. But like, what is that process to you kind of look like when a team is struggling mightily against off speed pitching? What's the type of things that as a team you can slowly try to get out of that funk and at least just have more competitive at bats against tougher pitches?
You know, I think it's all about as a hitter eliminating excess movement. And a lot of times when you're geared up, you know, to drive the ball and say, hey, we're a team that's going to slug or hit the ball at the ballpark, you know, there becomes some more excess movement as you're trying to generate power. Now, if you say I'm strictly on the fastball and you're trying to generate power, like you get to a point where you have your swing for that and you can get exposed, like especially how hard guys are throwing now. It's really hard to be on both. You'll hear hitters say that all the time. Like, I got to stay on the fastball, adjust the breaking ball. That's kind of easier said than done as well. For me, when I watch teams that, you know, that are good hitting teams, it's a more balanced approach. You know, you might have to give up some of that power, you know, just to have better at bats. Like, and a lot of the times, I'm not saying the Twins are going up trying to hit homers every single time. I think that's like a common misconception around baseball. Is that, hey man, we're in the slug era. Everyone's just taking their ace, man. Like, it's just not the case because you can't do that. Like, pitchers don't allow you to do that. But for me, like, if I was a Twins hitting coach, which I'm not, and I think that those guys do a good job of getting the guys prepared, it'd be a little bit more balanced approach there. I would try to eliminate a lot of excess movement. I talked about that last year with Max Kepler. Like, he just has a little bit of tip here, you know, as he's loading with his barrel. And I would try to get rid of that, you know, and then it's just you eliminate that and you're able to get the barrel to the ball on more pitches. And I think if you're in the mindset of slug, 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 and let's go attack the fastball, you can get into some bad habits. And I think we've seen some of that, you know, throughout the beginning of this year.
So when you say, okay, let's get into the baseball weeds here for a second. This is good. It's Coach Trev stuff here.
Yeah.
So you're saying like any, so you wouldn't be teaching them the Gary Sheffield thing here. You'd want stillness, leads to what in your mind?
Not stillness, but you know, repeatability, and then just eliminating excess movement. So sometimes, like, you'll see, like, you know, when Byron's going well, he presets his hip, and so instead of loading back up into the hip, he's already set there. So now it's just kind of like, you know, getting the hands moving a little bit, getting him into the slot and going to the ball. When he's going right, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I think if you watch Austin Martin hit right now, he's trying to quiet everything down, because he's understanding he's getting a chance at the big league level. He understands what big league pitching is. He's very quiet. So he's sacrificing some power. I know he hit his first homer over the weekend, but he's sacrificing some power. There's much more in his bat, in his body. But right now, if you watch him, he's kind of like really quiet at the plate, because he's just trying to get the barrel to the ball and have good at bat so he can stay at the big league level. I think you need more guys to approach the game like that. Like, not everyone has to slug throughout a lineup. And when you have guys up and down the lineup giving tough at bats, you know, that it makes the pitcher have to work harder, and then he makes more mistakes. And then the mistakes are where the homers come. That's kind of where I'm at with it. You can't just have 1 through 9 up there with the same exact approach, because that's just not the way baseball works.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I don't think that, like, the Twins fundamentally tell everyone, hey, go up there and swing from your heels and try and hit bombs, right? But you just hit on something that I do think is a problem that is really intriguing. And if you recall, about a year and a half ago, Austin Martin was struggling in the minors. And what came out was they were basically trying to get him to retool to hit for more power. Somewhere along the way, it sounds like he said, hey, guys, I can't. I'm struggling. Let me go back to what I do. He's done that. So I guess the question is this. What's the happy medium where we don't think they're all trying to hit home runs, but you actually can maximize your hitters potentially for what they do well, so they're more comfortable, as opposed to going with what looks like a philosophy?
I think you have to start with just, you know, a barrel accuracy. Like, where can you start? What does your swing look like if you're just trying to get the barrel to the ball at the right spot? Because that's the number one thing you have to do. Like, I have to put this barrel on the baseball. It's a very difficult thing to do. So I start small there and then work my way up to the power. I mean, that they used to say, I don't know if they say that anymore. They used to say power is the last thing to come to develop in a player. And now I think they want that faster and faster. But if you're not akin to getting your barrel to the ball, you know, in a direct manner, then I think that's when you get like the prolonged slumps, and you have these times where you're just going to go and you're going to look abysmal at the plate. And you might find some times where everything is working and everything's lining up and you do go through, you know, a power streak. But again, I think like that's just shouldn't be the philosophy for every single person. I think if you look around the league, we're starting to change. If you look at, you know, the Diamondbacks, or I guess the Orioles aren't a good example of this because they lead the league in homers, but the Diamondbacks is a good example for me. Like, they have guys up in the lineup that do different things. You're contact oriented. Then you have your guys that can really, you know, take chances and try to hit that 3-run homer, but trying to construct and have everyone, and I'm not saying the Twins do this. I think it is a common misconception amongst baseball fans that everyone's just trying to hit homers. But I think you start small and then work your way up to the power. And again, like, all these guys are so strong, you know, like, everyone's really strong in the big leagues right now. If you catch the ball out in front with the right spot and the right pitch, you're going to hit homers. So I'm just such a big fan of guys that can get their barrel to the ball consistently. And I think the homers just kind of come.
And also, like, the last year, the Twins broke the major league record for lineup strikeouts, and they've been pretty strikeout heavy to start the year, but I think that's going to even out because Gallo's not in the lineup anymore, and Michael A. Taylor was a pretty big strikeout guy, and you're bringing in guys who are more contact oriented. But like, for a long time, analytics nerds, even like me, would say, "Well, an out's an out. What's the, you know, you might as well put your all into it, and if you barrel it up, it's a home run because a strikeout's the same as it, but it's not. A strikeout is an automatic out. Batted ball is not an automatic out, and there's been so many games, even in the playoffs, like look at the Astros over the years, where you wind up looking at a box score at the end of the game and your lineup has 8 more strikeouts than their lineup. Well, that's 8 balls in play. Well, 3 might have been hits. 1 might have been a fielder's choice that advanced a runner into scoring position, or a sac fly that went second to third. Like, avoiding a strikeout, don't you think there's more value in avoiding a strikeout now with how strikeouts have skyrocketed than maybe ever before?
I think so. I mean, what's the average, what's the batting average on a ball in play? I mean, because you're going to, that's what you're getting.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't strike out, you're putting the ball in play. You're getting that much more percentage, right?
It's like 300, it's so, right? Yeah.
Strikeouts at some points are fine. Like, it's not like you have to just be super contact oriented. I believe there are times to take chances. And if you strike out, you strike out. But, you know, when you're watching a team that, you know, watching a pitcher cruise and get easy strikeouts, it's way different than, you know, a pitcher, you know, working to a 3-2 count and a guy fouling a few pitches off and then striking out. Those are two different at bats. So There's a lot to be said about that. And I don't think it's just a one way. I think you have to look at who's on your roster and decide kind of where to go from there. But you're right. I mean, putting the ball in play, and it puts pressure on everyone. You get a guy on base, you get the guy out of a windup, get him in a stretch where he might not be as comfortable. Steal some bags on them, get into scoring position. Everything changes when a team is putting balls in play rather than striking out. And I don't like to harp on that because it sounds like kind of like old man yelling at clouds, like never strike out. Because I there are times to take chances, and sometimes a strikeout is the same as an out. But, you know, like runners in scoring position and, you know, just runners on base in general, like, try not to strike out. I think that's where I'm at with that.
We've gone too far with the pro strikeout movement, and we need to rein it in a little bit. I don't
everything
think it's
is coming back. Everything's coming back, man. The sinker is back. Base running is back. Yep. Like it's just hilarious.
We need some knuckleballers, man.
Baseball is.
We need some knuckleballers.
We got one in San Diego. That guy Walden. He's like a half knuckleball, half fastball guy, which is my nightmare.
The next thing, pure slot ballers. That's what I want.
Oh yeah,
the Jamie Moyers,
Tony Fiori.
Just slot, just throwing slot, potential spitters, not worried about anything, occasional knuckleballs. Yeah. That's what I want.
There was some data showing that, you know, I think the Rays did it. I don't know if we talked about this last time or when, if we did. The Rays for a long time had a knuckleballer at every single level because they said that the day after you face a knuckleball or 2 days after you face a knuckleballer, you were just, the teams couldn't figure it out, data speaking. So.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't know if they do that anymore. I don't know if there was more data that said, hey, that data is wrong.
Hey, Louis Varland, we got an idea for you. Okay. So you're going to.
Ah, my guy, Louis.
Poor Louis.
Yeah. Actually, good segue there, Trev. So obviously, Varland and Wallner have both been sent down, both those guys. Maybe Wallner had probably higher expectations coming into opening day to a degree, but both those guys get sent down to St. Paul. And it just feels like just being like around the clubhouse and watching like basically every home game so far. I felt like both those players handled their struggles like really differently, even though they're kind of in the same little spot where they have to go to AAA to adjust things. And with Varland, I think it's his wrestling background where like that guy is just like walking around pissed off because he's confused, right? Like he has the stuff to a degree. It's just not being executed. And with Wallner, I think maybe the strikeouts got too much for him and there was adjustments. He couldn't figure it out. I mean, how do you, these players like, kind of handle some of that tough news where they make the big league roster, right? Like this is a dream come true, but now here they are 3 weeks into the season and they have to go down to AAA to work on things. I mean, from a mental psyche part, what is, I know you can't put yourself in either of their shoes, but what is that type of adjustment kind of like as a baseball player?
I've been in their shoes. I mean, you have to be so confident to be, I'll just speak from the hitter standpoint. You have to be so confident to be a hitter in the big league level. You have to fake confidence. You have to create it out of nowhere. And eventually, you know, you just get it like, hey, I'm a big leaguer. And Wallner feels like a big leaguer with the season he had last year. He knows that he can do it. It's just a very frustrating thing when you struggle. And it's really an ego check. And I think that's the biggest thing when you go down to AAA is, and they'll say it to you when they send you down. You're like, hey, you got some things you need to work on. Go down there, do that. You'll be back in no time. And that's actually the truth, but it sucks hearing that. You have to check the ego, look in the mirror and say, okay, what I was doing right then wasn't working. And if I want to be a big leaguer, I have to be a guy that can make adjustments. Everybody knows that. Sometimes it's really, really hard to look at yourself in the mirror and say that. So I think that's the biggest thing. Go down. Don't act like you shouldn't be there. Like, don't act like, oh, I'm not. This is bullshit. Like, go down there, be part of the team, engulf yourself in that team, help them win baseball games. And check the ego, and you'll find yourself. I mean, you're when you go down, the pressure's off. There's no pressure in AAA. Like, nobody's watching you screw up on ESPN or MLB Network. Like, you're in AAA. Like, it's the truth. Like, the pressure goes away. So, you know, you when you start to work on things with no pressure, usually they come a little bit quicker. I think both those guys will be fine. Like, as you mentioned, like, you know, it's not many people come up and just stay up. Like, there are times you just have to make adjustments, and they'll get back to the big leagues. Those guys are both big leaguers.
You, I think it was 2011, your first full year, you got sent down in the middle of the summer, and then you spiked your batting average like 40 points in the second half. It kind of clicked for you in the second half. What was that? Was it Terry Ryan or was it Gardy? Like, what was, cause that was probably the first time you had been sent down outside of like spring training, I'm assuming. Who gave you the news?
It's usually Gardy. I mean, Gardy and Terry was always kind of down there as well. Like, it was kind of a joint effort thing, but typically it's the manager to give you the news. Yeah. I mean, like, I got sent down so much. 2010, I wasn't really part of the team. I was up because JJ was hurt, up and down. Just, I knew I wasn't like, I knew I wasn't really ready for the big leagues at that point, but I was on the roster. And, you know, if your position gets hurt and you go up there and try to do your best. 2011, I believe I was sent down like up and down like four or five times that year.
Okay.
And that was really frustrating to me because I felt like I was good enough at that point, even though my numbers probably didn't dictate it. I felt like I wasn't getting enough like true playing time to really show what I could do at that level. But that was one of the more frustrating years. I remember I got sent down for Brian Dinkelman, I believe it was that year.
Dinkelman.
And I loved Dinkelman. And you know what? Like, he was crushing it at AAA, like probably deserved it. But I knew that I was a better player than him.
Dude, I'm pretty sure we used him.
We did.
I think he's a career 300 hitter.
Yeah.
I think because he only, he like
he
came
can play.
Up. Right.
And but I knew I was better than him. I was like, there's no way that he's a big leaguer and I'm
Dinkelman.
Not.
It was either 300 hitter or there was a grid square. It was like one outfield game. We were like, Brian Dinkelman. September call ups.
Oh yeah,
it was
he's
300.
Still in the organization coaching, if I'm not mistaken.
Cedar Rapids, right?
78 plate appearances in 2011 that should have been Trevor's, and so, he batted 301.
So like he earned OBP, it. So who am I to say anything?
Yeah, how dare you rip Dinkelman?
How dare I? I was never a 300 hitter. So
is AAA the? And I don't know. This has probably changed, but around that time, the word was always the AAA was also sort of poisonous because there were veterans who weren't ever going to get back and they were pissed off. And there was a point where I saw that actually teams would demote guys to double A at times to keep their young best prospects away from that. Did you find that to be the case where there were a lot of guys who were well past their primes and were sort of bitter about life?
I mean, I wouldn't say a lot, but those guys definitely existed. And, you know, when they see a young guy and they feel like they're not getting a fair shot because they're not on the 40-man roster and this they're outperforming this guy, but he's on the roster, so he gets called up. I mean, you can understand how frustrating that is. Like, this is your career and you feel like you deserve something, but just because of the simple fact that you're a little bit older and you're not on a 40-man roster, you're not getting that chance. So you could, as many bad guys as there were, you know, feeling that way, you know, kind of bringing everyone down, there was good guys too. So it evened out. Like, there was a lot of guys down there that understood, you know, what their role was. And, you know, they actually wanted to help you get back there. Those guys were just as many as the guys that were trying to bring you down. So you try to just stay away from those downers and get with the uppers. But that's definitely, I don't know how it is now, how young AAA has gotten.
Right.
But when I was going up and down, there was definitely some veterans there that acted like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, before we get to a couple dumb baseball questions to wrap the episode here, speaking of uppers, our friends at Nicolet Law are the uppers if you get into an accident of some kind. The exclusive personal injury law firm of the Score North Twin Show. Nicolet Law knows that when you or a loved one gets hurt, ordinary life can come to a stop. Things can get complicated. And that's where Nicolet Law comes in to make sure that you get the compensation you deserve after an accident. Get Minnesota's local award-winning injury lawyers. Get Nicolet at NicoletLaw.com or give them a call at 1-855-NICOLET. Again, NicoletLaw.com. And it's riding season, which means Dennis Kirk is back here across the Score North podcast. Whatever you ride, whether it's a motorcycle like our guy Dan Gladden or ATVs, UTVs, dirt bikes, whatever it is, DennisKirk.com has over 185,000 parts, apparel, and accessories for all of you riders out there. And same-day shipping on orders placed before 8 p.m. Central Time. They're shipped the same day. Free shipping on orders over $89. DennisKirk.com. We appreciate them coming back for another riding season here on the Score North podcast. Baseball. Okay, dumb baseball question number one from us, the three of us. Have you ever seen someone get ejected for something a fan yelled at an umpire before? And by the way, Hunter Wendelstedt, if you haven't seen this, Aaron Boone got ejected by Hunter Wendelstedt for something a fan wearing a blue shirt yelled above the dugout. And then Wendelstedt doubles down after the game talking to the pool reporter saying, like, I don't care who yelled it. Aaron Boone's responsible for
his dugout.
Yeah.
It's his dugout.
That was amazing, Trevor.
Well, he basically called Aaron Boone a liar. He said, I've never thrown a manager up for something a fan has done in my entire career. And so he like,
well, you did yesterday. Like,
you just did. Yeah. No, the whole situation was, go check out our guy, John Boy. He's got a good breakdown on it as well.
Although the announcers even, the announcers were like, no John Boy breakdown needed for this
hot
one.
Mic you got that. Great.
The hot mic was hot.
It's fantastic.
That was a hot, hot mic.
Yep.
This is like a silly tip. It's not a silly tip because I actually believe this. We can't get rid of stuff like this in baseball. It's so entertaining.
Yeah.
Like we could say all the things you want about umpires, and we need a challenge system, which I totally agree. More things need to be challengeable. Like like that is coming. It's going to be here. But the human interactions between managers and umpires can't go anywhere because it's the best two things that happened in that game yesterday were that the most entertaining things were that and Mason Miller at the end of the game striking out Judge and Soto. But like, what's everyone talking about in that game?
It is part of the entertainment. And ultimately, this is all just entertainment.
It's entertainment. I'm telling you that like stuff like that can't go away from the game. That's why we can't go straight robot umpires. I guarantee if you talk to Twins fans, some like if you talk to them, guys that have watched a lot of games, especially when Guardy was there.
Yeah.
If you ask them, like, give me your top five, like, memories. Like, one of them is probably going to be Gardenhire thrown out of a game. And, like, the antics. Or Torrey
Hunter, right?
Torrey Hunter taking his clothes off and throwing him out. Like, those are moments you just don't forget. And I love it, dude.
Okay,
Especially now that I'm watching games.
If you Google Ron Gardenhire, Hunter Wendelstedt, whole list of encounters comes up, by the way.
Yeah.
Here's one from July 19th, 2005. Minnesota Twins manager Ron Gardenhire unleashed a profanity-filled tirade aimed at Hunter Wendelstedt on Monday night. His quote was, I didn't raise my hands on him. I just told him the ball was high. When he threw me out of the game, he told me I was looking for showtime. That's very unprofessional. Very unprofessional.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Man. I'm a big fan of it. I know sometimes it can get silly, but like stuff like that. I mean, yesterday we're going to be talking about that for quite some time. And the guy, I don't know if you guys saw it. He was in a blue jacket, fan. And then he was like, I'm sure his phone was blowing up. So he ends up taking his jacket off. Like maybe now they won't see me. Maybe I'll be invisible.
Just slide.
And Boone's like pointing at the dude. It's like, it was him. It was him. And the guy's like, hey, what's going on over here?
And if you're Boone, like Boone says a lot of things to get ejected. And he's like, I mean, come on, man. The one time I abide by you telling me to be quiet, you still toss me?
He's actually becoming like the new Gardenhire. He's had some really good stuff out on the field. And really all the fans said. Yeah, all the fans said was, let's go home plate. That was it.
Let's go blue. Get out of here.
See ya, you're gone.
Oh, the savages thing is one of the greatest things of all time.
Yeah.
That guys are asking savages out there. You got to tighten it up. That was fantastic.
He's got another one where I believe it was Laz Diaz, and he's like impersonating his strike three call, and it's so good. Yeah, he's... I believe he's a Southern California guy in New York coaching the Yankees. I think he's great for that job. And I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon.
Who's your top three worst home plate guys?
Ooh.
Laz has to be up there. Angel, obviously. Like there's some, it might be a top five at this point.
If you're just looking at the scorecard, Laz and Angel have a lot of difficulties, but I don't know, man.
CB?
CB Buckner?
Yeah, CB's up there.
CB's really bad.
CB's up there as well. You just want the guys to just, if you ask them if that's the corner and they say yes, you don't want them to expand on that. You want the guys to maybe say they made a mistake every once in a while. But I found, honestly, if you treat them with respect and you really did it the right way, they'd help you out on some calls. I try to do as much as possible. One, because I had to see them the next day at third base. So you can't like really get into with the home plate umpire if you're the third baseman, because then you got to stand there the whole day.
It's awkward.
And yeah. I said, I need all the help I can get up there, guys. I'm not the best player. I'm trying to stick around. I need the umpires on my side. And Joe Mauer taught me that. He goes, why would you make the umpires mad? What good is that ever going to do? I was like, you're totally right. I'm going to get all these guys on my good side just in case one day they're going to help me out in a call. And I wonder if I went back and looked, like if I was a plus, like calls from the umpire guy. I don't know if we look at that or not, but
we should look that. It's funny. You always knew Joe very respectfully, but he'd be shuffling the dirt. Kind of, mm-hmm. he would never look directly back. He kind of tilt his head a little bit, didn't want to show him up, but then he'd purse the lips and you could tell, I disagree with that, but it's okay. Yeah.
Gosh darn it.
Guys need to do that. I know I just said I love the rants and but if you're a player, listen, man, you just be nice to these guys.
Yeah. Hey, last dumb baseball question. This is from Nate from the YouTube comment section. Have you ever been scared of getting hit by a pitch in your career before?
Not really. I kind of, you know, you're thinking about so many other things at the plate besides being hit by a pitch. But when the first AB back when I got hit in the ribs, broke my ribs, which sucked. First AB back, you're a little antsy. You don't want that to happen again. But typically, no, I never was too scared.
Okay.
Never felt that way.
Judd, what about you in youth baseball? Do you ever get scared?
I could barely hit the ball. Little what are you league? Talking yeah. about? What are you talking about? That's why I decided to make a career in criticizing people, because I couldn't play the game. That's what you do. That's what yes. you do. Yeah. Hey, Trev, I got one more for you.
Yep.
With 140 games left, 3-19 record and a minus 78 run differential, what do you think White Sox players are thinking as we aren't to May 1st yet? And this thing is, I mean, it's absolutely abysmal. Like, what do you think as a player when there is no hope and you're not even to summer yet or close to summer?
It's very, very difficult. I mean, I had some seasons like that with the Twins, not necessarily this early that it was given up on, but I before the season, you know, when you're organization comes out and says, hey, you know, there's going to be some rebuilding years here. We're going to be retooling. Like, what kind of message are you sending to the clubhouse? Like, then it's just, okay, well, I better get mine then. And then when you start playing selfish baseball and you're not winning games, it becomes absolutely miserable. So I don't know what these guys are feeling. Think about the 3-19. Dex, you're talking about like the clubhouse with the Twins. Like, they've heard music after the game 3 times. And 19 times they've walked in there and it's been silent and just a bad freaking feel. So at this early, I never experienced that. It's going to be a long summer. And I don't think we've seen the worst of it. I said this earlier today. I was doing a show with Chris Rose and we talked about the White Sox. Luis Robert Jr. has got like 3 or 4, I think he's got 3 years left in his contract. Eloy Jimenez has 2 years left in his contract. After these, both of these, I'm talking about after this year. Mm-hmm. Do they entertain trading these guys? Because when is your window? I know you got a bunch of top prospects, but like these guys, I know they're not really have a crazy value right now because they're not really performing and Lou Bob's on the IL. But if they trade those two guys, we're going to see we're talking about the A's being bad. The White Sox are the worst team in baseball by far. At least the A's players, if you watch them play, they're going out there and playing hard. They got some guys out there that love playing the game. This is like a collection of dudes that they're just trying to play for themselves now, trying to, you know, stay in the big leagues. And it's a bad watch. I mean,
Dex,
we need
Dex to, the Twins clubhouse is great. We need you to do at least an afternoon in the White Sox clubhouse and just give us a report. Like what's happening in there?
What's Drew Butera doing? He's there. Like,
he's a coach on that staff.
Yeah, oh, is he there?
Yes. He's such a positive guy. I guess I could reach out to him and be like, hey, man, I'm sorry. Like, how's it going?
Blink twice if you need saving.
Sorry, how's it going?
Trev, by the way, Jeffers did see the clip that we obviously talked about last week, thought it was absolutely hilarious. And then he also confirmed, he's like, I'm pretty sure last year I was the best major league hitter on 3-2. And I'm like, yeah, I think you were. I think you were the best hitter on 3-2.
They showed that clip. He's the highest OPS of any catcher since the beginning of last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't forget about Jeffers, guys.
He's yoked, man. He's
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It's ridiculous. So, hey, great stuff here. Trevor Plouffe, Tuesdays on the Score North Twin Show. You can find him, John Boy Media, talking baseball, Baseball Today with Chris Rose. You alluded to that. And then we'll see you on Bally's here
this weekend.
Friday.
This weekend, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then I'll be in Chicago, watch these White Sox again.
Oh, let's go.
Yeah. Can just I think go it's me, LaTroy, and Corey. That'll be fun.
Okay.
Oh, cool. That'd be great.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, thank you. Trevor Plouffe Tuesday here on the Score North Twin Show. Be on the lookout for Declan's extra innings episodes this week as well.